You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. And once again, we're talking over-unders today. If you joined us a couple of episodes ago, we talked about the Southwest Division in the Western Conference. Today, we're jumping over to the Eastern Conference to talk about the Southeast Division, the second part in a six-part series. And of course, we're not going to do the Northwest Division quite yet. We're going to save that for a little bit later. So again, jumping over to the Eastern Conference and looking at a few teams over there in what arguably could be the worst division in the NBA. And in some ways, that makes it a little bit more fun to predict. If you joined us a couple of podcasts ago, you heard Kyle Daugherty on the podcast, and he's back with us today. How's it going, Kyle?
Going well.
Awesome. So we're going to jump right into it. The Charlotte Hornets are arguably going to be the worst team in the NBA.
Bad.
They're going to be really bad this year. Their over under is 23. Is that the lowest over under?
Yes, it is. Approximately 1.5 wins lower than the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Okay, so projected by Vegas to be the worst team in the league at 23 is where their win total set. In terms of their moves in the offseason, let's see, the Hornets did really not much, at least not much positive. They added Terry Rozier, which I would say he's a good player.
I would say he has a lot to prove this year. I think he's come off the bench a lot in Boston. He had that big playoff run a couple of years back when Kyrie was injured, but really, who knows? He's definitely an interesting person to watch this year.
At 3 years and $57 million, though,
less fun to watch if you are a Charlotte Hornets fan, especially after seeing your franchise player Kemba Walker walk out the door in that acquisition.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone would argue Terry Rozier is a good player, and as a Louisville Cardinals fan, I feel like you're rooting for him and the Hornets to be better than the worst team in the league. But at 3 years and $57 million, that's not exactly a great sign for what the Hornets are trying to do. They also drafted PJ Washington 12th overall and added Cody Martin in free agency. They of course lost Kemba Walker, who went to Boston in that sign and trade that brought Rozier to Charlotte. They lost Frank Kaminsky in free agency, Jeremy Lamb, and Shelvin Mack, and then Tony Parker, who had his swan song with the Hornets last year in a similar to Alonzo Mourning playing for the Toronto Raptors. I think we'll all forget that ever happened. He retired, and that's that. I mean, they definitely got worse this offseason. So, 23, Kyle, are you going to go over or under?
It's really, really tough to go over for them. They're in the Eastern Conference. There's a lot of kind of mediocre teams in the middle to bottom of the Eastern Conference. I'm still going to take the under because I feel like ultimately they're going to want to tank to kind of figure out what their next step is. They're pretty much capped out, which is really bad for a team that has very little roster talent. But I feel like they have to tank. They don't really have much on their roster. They're going to be depending on Terry Rozier, Malik Monk, to really take it on. And I don't know that is going to be any success for them at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that won 39 games last year, but losing Kemba Walker obviously is a huge blow. And then you subtract other regulars, especially Frank Kaminsky and Jeremy Lamb would be the two other guys that saw regular rotation minutes that are gone from last year that had positive impacts on the team. I actually think that this team should be better than 23 wins, and also by virtue of playing the Eastern Conference and it being such a poor conference this year, even probably worse than in recent years. But I tend to agree. They're going to need to embrace the tank at some point. And without much in the way of upside there, unless Rozier suddenly blossoms into a top flight scorer or something, suddenly when he has a little bit more freedom on in a bigger role, I don't see this team hitting the over. I do think they'll be the worst team in the league. I think they'll be under, probably not by a lot. Just again, they're going to not face exactly stiff competition in the Eastern Conference. So yeah, I'll go ahead and take the under for them as well.
Yeah, I'd stay away from this if I'm throwing money on over-unders in Vegas right now. I'd stay away from it, but I would tag the under and just if you have any choices for league pass throughout the season, I would stay away from this team.
Yeah, and I think we'll see a pattern here. It does, you know, if you are putting money on over-unders, you generally are going to want to stay away from the highest win totals and the lowest win totals, because there is so much that can happen there. A lot of times there's a few teams in the middle that you can really make hay on, that Vegas simply just misses ever so slightly. There's very rarely are they off by a lot, but yeah, I think us both taking the under here, that seems to make a lot of sense with Charlotte. Next up is the Washington Wizards. They have an over under win total of 26.5 wins, set by Vegas. They, of course, are owners of probably the worst contract in the NBA. I don't know if it's even that controversial. And John Wall with his ongoing injury issues.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. And they, let's see, where I'm pulling up their offseason here. Won 32 games last year. However, if you look at some of the guys that they lost, were guys that saw significant minutes. Trevor Ariza, Jeff Green, Dwight Howard. Of course, he didn't play very much due to injury. Jabari Parker, Bobby Portis, Tomas Satoransky. And then in terms of additions, they were involved in a couple of trades as kind of a salary dump location. In terms of bigger names, they signed Isaiah Thomas, Ish Smith, CJ Miles, Davis Bertans, who they swooped in and got him from the Spurs. Let's see, Mo Wagner, really nobody else of note. They drafted Rui Hachimura in the with the 9th pick.
I'm shaking my head no to that pick. I think it was too early for him. I think he was a middle to end of the round. I think he's got a lot of development. He's not as athletic as they're going to need him to be as a three stretch four.
He's going to get a lot of run though.
Yeah, probably.
It's just not a good roster, and going to be one of the worst teams in the league. So with the total set at 26.5, where are you going with this one?
They still have Bradley Beal, which I don't think we ever talk as much as we should about him as a blossoming superstar in the league. I think the biggest change that they have is in their front office. Getting rid of Ernie Grunfeld is probably a win that the Wizards fans will be praising throughout the entire year. But once again, that John Wall contract is going to be haunting them throughout the entire season. I'll take a slide over for the Wizards just on the back of Bradley Beal.
Yeah, I think. I hate to agree with you twice in a row, but I was thinking slight over myself. I mean, winning 32 games last year, they might not quite get to that point this year, but they didn't get significantly worse in the offseason. Still have Bradley Beal, still have John Wall. And yeah, I just think not getting that much worse. Well, the conference around them did get worse. It sounds like mostly refusing to entertain trade offers for Beal, and nobody else is going to entertain trade offers for John Wall. So I don't know that much is going to change there unless they have a change of heart and somebody blows them away with a trade offer. Beal has always been a favorite trade target of Timberwolves fans. I'm sure that the Timberwolves have tried to sweet talk the Wizards into a deal with Andrew Wiggins going to Washington, you know, and hopefully some other things in exchange for Beal. But I don't see that happening. I don't see the Wizards. If I were them, I'd certainly consider moving Beal. I don't think he gets moved, at least not until the deadline. So between Beal and Wall and, you know, just how bad the East is, this is going to be a common theme as we work our way through the Eastern Conference. I'd go with the slide over as well.
I think the only way that they get the Beal moved and the only way that they accept a deal is if Wall's contract's involved, and I think that's going to be tough for any team to take on. But maybe somebody out there thinks that Wall has something left in the tank, or they have a good medical staff that can come back from that Achilles tear. I think that's the only way you get Beal is taking on that contract.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I keep going back to somebody's got to win some games in the Eastern Conference when they're beating up on each other. And so I think I agree with you. I think with how good Beal is, you know, I do think that they managed to hit the over, even if it is ever so slightly. So we'll see how that shakes out. Before we get to the next team in the division, wanted to talk briefly about Peloton. Can't find a workout that keeps you engaged? Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED to get started. That's onepeloton.com and promo code LOCKED to get started. All right, let's talk about the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks last year won 29 games. This year, their over-under win total set at 36, which is a little bit of a leap from obviously where they finished last year. Looking at their offseason, they did lose Kent Bazemore in a trade with Portland, and they acquired Evan Turner to fill his spot. They lost Taurean Prince, which is a significant loss. Miles Plumlee, Solomon Hill, Amari Spellman, Deonta Davis, Jalen Adams, a few guys that didn't play all that much last year. In addition to adding Evan Turner, they also acquired Alan Crabb, took on his contract from Brooklyn. They added Jabari Parker in free agency and drafted DeAndre Hunter fourth overall in the draft. They took on Chandler Parsons as well, drafted Cam Reddish 10th overall, and also got Damian Jones from Golden State. So they had an extremely active offseason after winning 29 games behind Trae Young last year. In terms of a busy offseason, it certainly was busy. I don't know that they got that much better, and it's fair to assume that they're going to see some development from their young players. What's your take on their over-under total of 36?
It's going to be a tough one, I think. Once again, this goes back to the Eastern Conference where somebody has to win games. It's not going to just be at the top with the 76ers and the Bucks winning all the games. I'm going to go over on the Hawks. I see a lot of promise there with the young kind of nucleus that Travis Schlenk is building there. I like Trae Young, the way he finished the season last year. Obviously, a lot of growth left for him, but I think he's going to be the type of point guard they need to set up some of their young players. And Herter, and they have obviously got DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish in the draft. So I'm really curious to see how they all play together. And obviously John Collins, who's going into his third year, is going to continue to build on the stuff that he's done recently. I'm going to take the over and bet on Trae Young and his making players better around him.
Wow. A little bit surprised. I am actually a pretty easy under with them. I don't think a whole lot of the guys that they drafted early in the draft, DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish, I'm actually a little bit lower on them than I think a lot of people might be. I also think Evan Turner has consistently been overrated. And Taurean Prince is a legitimately good NBA player, and I think losing him hurts them a lot. I go under here. And granted, a lot of it depends on Trae Young's development. And if he goes from a solid, very good rookie and a solid overall player to a star suddenly, then the over's in play. But I think they're only slightly better than last year. I think they probably win in the low 30s. It's a pretty easy under for me, and I may actually end up picking them when I do play some bets. I think for me, that's a fairly easy one.
I don't know. I see DeAndre Hunter coming in and being a contributor. He's been a winner at Virginia. Watched him throughout his entire college career. As a big Louisville fan, I grew to hate him and hated watching him play. So I think that gives me a little bit of extra confidence in his ability to succeed there. But really, this is me putting the money on Trae Young and seeing his development continue. I think there was a lot of talk last year during the summer league about how poor he performed, but he really kind of took all of the criticism and grew and developed in their system, and I'm excited to see what he can do this year.
Yeah, I think they do have a few guys, a few veterans who if they get on the floor, Alan Crabb's a decent player if overpaid. Chandler Parsons, if he comes back and plays and chooses to play, Alex Len, they've got a few guys that are kind of question marks in terms of if they play as they're capable and stay on the floor, you know, they could stumble into a few additional wins, but I'm betting on that not really happening. And I'm thinking that they're going to be an easy under for me still. But I mean, hey, you could say that about almost everybody in the East and you wouldn't probably be all that far off base. Anything else on the Hawks?
Not anything else that I can think of.
I don't think I really want to talk about them all that much more anyways. All right. We're going to take one more really quick break. All right. We are to the Orlando Magic, who last year won 42 games and did make the playoffs. This year, expectations are only slightly higher, to be precise, a half game, according to Vegas. 42.5 is their projected win total. Their offseason was actually relatively quiet. Didn't really lose anybody. And they added Al-Farouq Aminu on a three-year deal in free agency. And he was really the only significant addition that's going to see the court immediately. They did retain Nikola Vucevic and Terrence Ross, perhaps overpaying them slightly for what they are, but they didn't get worse, I guess, is the moral of the story. So after winning 42 games, they have a 42.5 win total. Kyle, what is your thought for the Magic this upcoming season?
So they are the reigning division champs, which is their first division championship since 2010, I believe. A lot of excitement in the Orlando area, I'm sure. I'm gonna take the slight over for them. I think coaching with Clifford coming in is gonna be continue to develop the culture there. I think it's gonna be key. I think Vucevic has had a great year last year. Was top 10 in the league in both PER and VORP, and so I'm gonna take the over. But I still have no idea whether their front office understands positions in the NBA. They have 6 to 7 contributors that are in the front court, and they're just not all going to be able to see the court. So I'm really curious to see how all that plays out with who's going to be making it on the court and getting minutes throughout the year.
Yeah, I'm also going to take a slight over for them. I think the addition of Aminu is probably underrated. He's always been a solid contributor to largely contending or at least playoff teams. And Vucevic is only going to, you know, I mean, I guess he's basically in his prime now, but I think he's going to get a little bit better. I think that the team just didn't lose much in the way of depth. And again, as mentioned, the Eastern Conference is pretty awful. They're going to play Atlanta and Washington and Charlotte 3 or 4 times each. And, you know, say they play 12 games, they should go 10-2 in those games against those teams. So there's a built-in, you know, 10 wins right there. So I do think they'll be an over. I think they'll win in the mid-40s. There'll be a slight improvement. And who knows? I mean, that could be enough for a top 4 seed in the East with the way things could shake out.
What do you think their closing lineup looks like? They have Bamba, they have Vucevic, they have Aaron Gordon, they have Aminu, they have Jonathan Isaac, they have Markelle Fultz. I believe they still have DJ Augustine.
Yeah.
Who's their closing lineup? They have Michael Carter Williams.
It's probably the same lineup as last year, with the potential for Aminu seeing some minutes depending on matchups. I think Aminu is effective as a kind of a small ball. I mean, he played some 4 with Portland. But I mean, it's the Magic are for the most part going to have both Vucevic and Gordon on the lineup in crunch time situations, and Isaac with his positional flexibility as well. It's tough for me to see them. I don't know. I think it's probably about the same as last year. It's really the same team, just with the assumption that they're going to improve a little bit and then add Aminu to the mix. And so I don't know. I mean, I've always been a big Evan Fournier fan. He's still only 27 and he's clearly continuing to improve.
He played really well in the U.S.-France game. Was one of the, I'd say, kryptonite to their loss in FIBA. Him and Gobert were the top 2 players on the French team to beat the U.S.
Bamba, I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. They have a ton of front court guys, and Bamba, you know, just being 20 as a rookie last year, 20 years old. You know, they've got a bunch of guys that they're going to want to try and work into the rotation as well. And he was, you know, even as a rookie, for as bad as he was on offense, he was extremely impactful on defense. And, you know, we mentioned Isaac. He's only going to be 22. It's really interesting to think about what the upside of this team could be. They're extremely young. The only guy that's over the age of 30 in their regular rotation is going to be Augustine. So they really should continue to improve. Steve Clifford's long been an underrated coach, and he did a good job with consistently mediocre talent in Charlotte previously. So, yeah, I really do. I actually really like the over. The more we've talked through this, I feel pretty good about that.
How long do you think Fultz is a storyline? I haven't paid attention to this offseason on whether his trainer is coming out and saying he can shoot still. I haven't listened to it yet when he was in Philly about, you know, Drew, I think it was Drew Hanlon is his shooting coach that was saying that he was ready to come back, and obviously he wasn't. Is he continue to be a storyline as the former number one pick? Is he kind of fade off into the distance as we go into the season and they're having success without him?
It's a great question. I think inherently, as the former number one overall pick, he will be somewhat of a storyline, which is somewhat unfortunate because this is a pretty good young team. But yeah, I mean, I could definitely, especially with the way that things went down in Philadelphia, it's not like he was just an Anthony Bennett style bust or anything. There's just a lot of cloudiness and uncertainty surrounding the issues that have befallen him. So yeah, I mean, I think he is a storyline of some kind, here early on in the season. It's just it'll be interesting to see what type of playing time he gets and what the team decides to do with him, and also assuming he's able to stay healthy. But I mean, he's only played 33 total games in his career, and we all know the issues that he had in Philadelphia. So we'll see if they follow him to Orlando, I guess.
I think I would take them, even though Vegas has the Heat projected higher. I think I would take Orlando over the Heat just because of their continuity and some of the knowns versus the unknowns of what's going to come with the Heat this year.
That's a perfect segue. The Miami Heat are the last team we're going to talk about today, as we're looking here at the Southeast Division. Miami Heat last year won 39 games and missed the playoffs, finishing just below Orlando. But they did have a busy offseason. Of course, Dwayne Wade retired. Hassan Whiteside was traded to Portland. Josh Richardson was traded to Philadelphia, which means that Jimmy Butler, everybody's favorite former Timberwolf.
Is he old friend Timberwolf, or is he?
He's not old friend.
Okay.
He's, I don't know. I have to think of a different term, but he's not an old friend. I think Greg Steemsma called an old friend earlier this week, in a tweet for Dunking with Wolves because of his, he played at Wisconsin. It's close. He played for the Timberwolves for 1 year. And he just joined the Timberwolves staff as an assistant player or associate player, development coach or something. But Jimmy Butler does not get the same title as Greg Steemsma. I think Steemsma has a much better history with Minnesota than Jimmy Butler.
How great does Jimmy Butler feel about just being completely overshadowed by the Anthony Davis situation last year? Everybody just forgot how terrible he was at the beginning of last season. Anthony Davis swoops in and takes all of the headlines, and everybody just very conveniently forgets that Jimmy Butler treated that situation as about as badly as any player has over the last 10 years.
Yeah, I hate to give him to say that he's gotten a free pass, but it really feels like he's pretty much gotten a free pass. Like, people just don't care. And I'm all for players, you know, trying to get what they want, you know, but I mean, that's, I guess, what free agency is for. And I don't know. We don't have to rehash the whole situation, but let's just say I wasn't too sad to see him not really succeed with the Sixers, and he kind of, things kind of went down the way that I would have wanted them to in Philadelphia. So
yeah, I think him moving on to the Heat really changes my view of the Sixers as we go into next year. Obviously that's for a different podcast, but I think it'll be really interesting to see that he feels like he's in the place that he wants to be now. So is he actually going to be happy, or is he going to kind of spark up the same feelings if something doesn't go right over the first month and a half, 2 months of the year?
Yeah. Miami, I mean, they're once again a fascinating team. It feels like they haven't really been bad in the Eric Spoelstra era, and obviously they were amazing when they had the big three, but they're always, because Spoelstra is such a good coach, they're always around the playoff picture. And I mean, on the one hand, losing Josh Richardson's a really good player, and Jimmy Butler's sure a little bit better. but losing Whiteside and Richardson and Wade, among others, and then replacing them with Jimmy Butler and Myers Leonard, and then drafting Tyler Hero, friend of Carl Anthony Towns, Tyler Hero, with the 13th overall pick in the draft. I think it's fair that, to say that they got better. I mean, they added Jimmy Butler, and he's probably still probably a top 15 player in the league. But I don't know how much better they got. So again, 39 wins last year. Their over under in Vegas is set at 44. Do you think, Kyle, that adding Jimmy Butler, among others, improves their win total by 5? Would you go over or under on 44?
I'm going to take the over. I think it's a slight over. I think Orlando will, like I said earlier, I think they'll be a little bit better. Maybe the 46, 47 range. I think Miami will finish second in this division. I think Jimmy Butler increases their ceiling. I think he gives them a player down the stretch to take the last shot. That's obviously something that he is wanting to do whenever he's on a team. But I think he's shown to be pretty successful at doing that, and I think that was one of the skills that he showed time and time again at the end of the season in Philly when nobody really wanted to take the last shot. Jimmy was always willing to take the ball and go after it. I think it'll be really interesting to see how some of the personalities mesh there, but as you mentioned earlier, Spoelstra is a phenomenal coach. He's not talked about nearly as much as he should be. Udonis Haslem seems to still be on this team, which is fascinating as well. But I think I'm going to take a slight over. But I see the possibility of this imploding pretty quickly if something doesn't go right.
This is a tough one for me. I don't think they got that much better. Butler always seems to miss 10 to 15 games a year these days due to some sort of injury. I think Josh Richardson's a little bit underrated with just how good he was the last couple of years. So I really am tempted to take the under. On the other hand, I alluded this a moment ago. Look at Spoelstra's career. He's now been the head coach for, I think it's 10 seasons. He's never won less than 37 games. He's only won less than 41 games. So he's only been under 500 twice, and that includes last year. So granted, he had LeBron James for 4 years, and I get that. But even of late, I mean, his teams have still been solid. He's still only missed the playoffs 3 times in 10 years. So I don't know. I kind of want to say push, which I know is a cop-out. I'll go with a slight over, just because I think Spoelstra is that good, and I think that Butler is also quite good. I think getting rid of Whiteside may have some positive effects over the course of the season for the Heat. I'm going to go with the slight over. I think they win roughly 44 or 45, maybe 46 games, and challenge for a top 4 seed in the East. But it all hinges on Butler's health. I think if he struggles at all with health, they're in big trouble. And by big trouble, I mean would probably be about in the same spot they finished last year in the upper 30s in wins.
They don't really have a lead guard. I think Dragic is still their starting point guard, maybe. Who knows what happens there? I think he was able to make it back at the end of the last year. I don't know if he made it back for the last couple of weeks or not, but he may have been out the entire year. But I think seeing what they do with their backcourt will be interesting. Obviously, they have they have Tyler Hero, who was drafted this year, and then they have Butler and Waiters Island is still there. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with their backcourt. I think having Butler and Myers Leonard obviously played really well in the playoffs last year. I think it'll be interesting to see what Spoelstra is able to use him as a pick and pop or a pick and roll player to complement Butler.
Yeah, and I mean they've still got some relatively young guys that still have some projectability left. I mean they've still got Justice Winslow. So depending on what you think of him, I mean he's only 23, barely 23 years old. So there's still some intrigue there. But they do have a lot of guys that are overpaid, from Dragic, which I know he made the All-Star team just a couple years ago, but $19 million for him. James Johnson, Deion Waiters, Kelly Olynyk. They've got a lot of guys that are getting paid a lot of money to be just okay players. So they're going to go as far as Jimmy Butler and his massive salary are going to take them, which, it's almost surely going to be the playoffs in the East. But I think the writing's on the wall that this is going to be another kind of so-so season for a Jimmy Butler team where they're going to be in the playoffs, but maybe not go much beyond that. All right. That does it for the Southeast Division. Here on the Locked On Wolves podcast, we are again working our way. This was part two of six parts, working through all the divisions in the NBA. So stay tuned. Our next podcast will include the third division that we are going to be reviewing. So once again, thank you for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon for Kyle Daugherty. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.